This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, Tan Talk listeners. Today on Joy on Paper, Patsy will be rerunning one of her favorite shows from this past Valentine's Day. Enjoy.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, as all of my listeners know, I love poetry, and of course, it's the day before Valentine's Day, so where does my heart go but to poetry? And so today I'm thrilled. I have three absolutely celebrated poets who are going to be on the program today because I want to encourage all of you. Read poetry, write poetry. It is great for your mind. My son is a millennial, and one of the things that they do, they love these evenings where they do trivia. And I'm now starting to encourage what I call pup parties, where it's a pot of poetry. When you're having a party, you put in either in one pot, you can put in names of poets and a little bit of bio about them and have people pick it out and read it. Or in another pot, you put actually some poetry for people to read, because I have discovered that you don't know how hammy some of your friends can be until you ask them to read a poem. They can turn into Laurence Olivier. They can be, you know, you don't know. I mean, they just love it. So this is a wonderful thing to have a pop party. And I'm going to start my pop party today with, I've got three wonderful poets on, L.L. Barkat. She's going to be first, and then we're going to go to J.S. Lamb, and then last but not least, certainly, is Kim Dower. So first, I want to welcome to the program L.L. Barkat. I get to call her Laura, and I'm so happy to have you on the program today.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Well, thank you, and I just want to tell everyone your name is spelled B-A-R-K-A-T, Barkat, yeah. So they can look you up and you pop right up there on when people are searching. Wow. You are an amazing author. One of the things, I'm going to let you, you know, today is your, this is your time. You get to tell why you love poetry, why people should write poetry. I just want to tell people that they should definitely get one of your books that is absolutely fantastic. It's called Rumors of Water, Thoughts on Creativity and Writing. And this book, all of you writers out there, get this book. And all of you people who are dreaming of writing, get this book. Because Laura knows what she's talking about. And the other title that I really like also is Earth to Poetry, 30 Days, 30 Poems. But there's so many. So instead of me talking, you tell about what you want to tell about poetry. And I hope that you're planning to read something.
Oh, okay. Well, what would you want me to just talk about poetry?
Well, yeah, talk about poetry, why you love it, where, how it got into your heart.
Well, I would say my mother gave me two great gifts in my life. One was tea and the other was poetry. So every morning before we'd get on the school bus, she would sit down with my sister and I, pull us close to her on the couch, and read us poems from the best-loved poems of the American people. And she focused on narrative poetry mostly, but which is great to do with kids because it's poems that tell a story. And that, I would say, was the early way that she got poetry into our hearts.
So, wow. What a gift she gave you. It's amazing.
Did. I don't know if that's what she was trying to do. Maybe she was just trying to settle us down before the bus came, but it turned out to be a wonderful gift.
So you started writing poetry, and tell us a little bit about yourself. I want people to just get to know you a little bit, and then you can tell why you're going to select the poems that you're going to read.
Okay, well, let's see. So my mom read us poetry when I was young. I never thought that I would be a poet. In fact, I took some class in college. I don't remember what class it was. Maybe a Renaissance class. You know, with all these complicated sonnets we were reading and kind of really nothing like the narrative poems that my mom had read us when we were kids. And our assignment was to write a sonnet. Well, I thought that was basically the beginning and the end of me being a poet. Now, I mean, I would recommend that people actually try to write form poetry, because it's like with anything else, it's an exercise. It's like kind of practicing your scales, right? You don't get it right the first time. And I really thought I would never be a poet. It wasn't until really I was an author and was online and met some poets online that I began to write poetry. So that was, I was a late bloomer. So anyway,
so
and you want me to read a poem?
I hope you, every poet should have a poem ready.
Should have a poem. I think one of the things that people often want to know is, how do you come up with your poems? For me, it's less of a practice. In other words, some people, even as writers in general, they find it's great to just have a practice, that they sit down every day, that they write every day. I don't know. My rebel self doesn't seem to be able to kind of work with that situation. So for me, it's more like it goes in spurts, right? And then of times when I will practice deeply, and then I come back and I do other things, completely other things. Well, in terms of actually then writing poems, it's not because I sit down to write. It's usually, I discovered recently, it's usually some kind of juxtaposition that happens. So I discovered this when I was on retreat. It was a writing retreat, and it happened to be held at a Catholic retreat center. So I went to the room after the writing day and went to put some stuff away in the desk drawer, and I found a crucifix in the desk drawer that was, I think, supposed to be on the wall. Now, this image, this actual item in the desk drawer, really struck me as odd. And somehow it juxtaposed with an experience I'd had at the writing retreat, where we were reading some poem by Mary Oliver that's very popular, but somehow on that day, when in her poem Wild Geese, where she said basically you don't have to be good, somehow that collided with Jesus in the desk drawer. So I can read you the poem that came from that.
Okay.
It's called Insomnia at the Catholic Retreat Center. And this came really, the first line came to me while I was having insomnia. Insomnia at the Catholic Retreat Center. All night, Jesus has been suffering in the desk drawer. Every time I move from waking to tentative sleep, I begin to worry for him, there on his back, still saving the world in the silent dark. Someone, having felt it was best to tuck him away, leave him to rest in his sorrowful wakefulness. As for me, I keep turning from side to back to side again, thinking of Mary Oliver's Wild Geese, and wondering why we do not have to be good, not even a little, while Jesus goes on suffering, his only home 100 miles or 1,000 from everything we forgot to love.
Oh, just, yeah. It's magical. It's magical. You know how a few words, just in the right order, just says so much, isn't it? It's just such a thrill. Now, you work actually with poets sometimes and try to help?
I work with poets all the time.
All the time.
I manage a site called tweetspeakpoetry.com, and we're one of the few sites that will review almost every poetry book that is sent to us. We have someone who reviews poetry. almost every single week. And if we get too many poetry books in, he'll put a few together in one post. But it's very unusual to have a site review as many poetry books as we do. But we want to bring poets to our readers so that they can discover all the wonderful poems that are out there. So I run that, and so working with poets all the time. Yeah.
And it's called Tweet Sweet.
Tweet like a bird, tweet, and speak like I'm speaking to
and
you.
Speak. So tweet speak.
Tweet speak poetry.com.
Well, I think that, you know, that's a wonderful thing that you do for people, because poets need encouragement, and people need to know that there are other people out there who love poetry as much as they do. And I think TweetSpeak is an absolutely great idea.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So, you know, what was the first poem you had published?
Oh, me. Let's see. Actually, this is a really wonderful full circle story. We currently have a fantastic woman who is doing poetry reading for us, and it's available just to our patrons. But she's been a reader for NPR member stations. Her name is Lori Klein. Lori Klein, I met at a writing conference, I don't even know, over 10 years ago, and we lost touch. She was the first to publish a poem of mine in a journal that, I think it was called Rock and Sling. And I don't even remember the poem. It was called Holy Albino, and it was about this redwood tree that I was searching for in the woods that was apparently a white tree, but I couldn't find the tree. And so, anyway, she helped me with the poem, and she published it, and we lost touch, and she found me much later, and now she's reading poetry for us. So,
well,
that was the first.
One of the things that, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I trying to find ways to encourage people to read. I think Thanksgiving Day is a wonderful day that people should set aside, you know, after you've had the turkey and people are in between games. And it's just a nice thing to take and do this, what I call this pop party, where you put poems in a pot and have people pick it out. And
I love that idea. That's so great.
I think it's wonderful. Another one that I really like is Poet Charades. Have you ever played that?
I haven't. Oh, you mean...
You give their names. And so many poets have wonderful names for charades, like Longfellow. And Tennyson. I mean, you know, you've got the Tennyson.
Right.
You've got, of course, Maya Angelou. So, you know, you have just the names themselves are just so much fun that people can come, you know, with absolutely wonderful, charades for those. And again, that's something you can do at a pop party. You put in a pot the names and have people pick out and play poets. Charades. It's a way to get people interested, because, you know, if somebody picks out their name and they pick out Longfellow, well, they'll be able to do a charade, and then after a while they'll start saying, you know, I don't think I've read Longfellow, and it's like the thing. Maybe I should look him up. You know, first they look him up in Wiki, then they might look up one of his poems, and next thing you know, Longfellow has a new fan.
All because we call those poetry seeds, and I love the idea of all different kinds of poetry seeds that you release into the world. Like Miss Rumphius. Have you ever read that children's story, Miss Rumphius?
No, tell us about it.
She is when she's young, she's trying to figure out what her place in the world will be, and it takes her on long journeys. She goes many places, and then when she's old, she comes back to where she grew up, and it's set in Maine, near the seaside. She comes back, and she's not feeling well, actually, and she's looking out onto the hills, and she suddenly gets this idea that she's going to take lupin seeds, I think that's how you pronounce it, that flower, that beautiful flower that looks like a cluster of grapes reaching skyward. She decides she's going to scatter these lupin seeds across the countryside, and so that's what she does in her old age. She walks the byways, and she scatters these seeds. And I like to think of what you just said. That's like poetry seeds, just kind of scattering them. Right?
Exactly. Well, that's what we want to do. We want people really, as your mother did, a poem a day. There is really something in reading a poem a day. Poetry gives you the use of words, the ideas. I find that it's very calming in most cases. Let's say you read something really strange, but it calms you down for a few minutes. Just one poem a day, and it really does make a difference. And so I would love to tell people that they should go to your website, which is?
TweetSpeakPoetry.com. And in fact, if they're looking for, if they're looking to read a poem a day, one of the things that we have found is it's actually difficult to find a good poem to read every day. If you're trying to do that yourself, it can actually be kind of frustrating to sift through the many collections, the things that are out there. So we have an inbox publication. It's a sponsored publication, but it does cost $5.99 a year just to cover some very, very basic delivery costs. But for 50 cents a month, we give you the best poems we can find every day. So Monday through Friday, you can get an inbox poem. And all the poems are selected to really be the best in poetry. Something that's beautiful. It may make you think, it may challenge you, but we like to say, we promise we will never ruin your day. There's a lot of that that goes on out there.
It's a wonderful, wonderful idea. And I want to, again, remind my listeners that your book, Rumors of Water, Thoughts on Creativity and Writing, is excellent. And and you also have a picture book, right?
I have books. I have The Golden Dress Fairy Tale, which is, actually, they're both very poetic. They're not poems, but they're very poetic. And that illustrator, her art is like Gustav Klimt. It's absolutely, it just glimmers. It's so beautiful. So that's The Golden Dress. And then I have A's for Azure, the alphabet in colors, and that was with an alcohol ink artist whose work is also stunning. In fact, her work was exhibited at a museum in Georgia, the work that was from the book. And she just won an award out of 200 member organizations in Georgia for their museums. Her exhibit that was all the art from the book won an award. So.
Wow. And it is beautiful. I have it. I just
you have A's for Azure?
Yeah, sure. The minute I saw it.
Now, isn't it beautiful?
It's beautiful. Gorgeous. Well, I'm going to go and move on to J.S. Lamb, another great poet.
Okay.
But I want to thank you again, L.L. Barkat, for being on the program today. And I think everything you do in life is probably poetry in motion. So thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper.
Thank you, Patsy. Again, happy Valentine's Day.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. All right, now I'm moving on. Oh, this is exciting. Hi, Jim, are you there?
I am here, and I'm excited.
Oh, this is wonderful, Jim. I'm so happy that you're able to join us today, and I'm so grateful for your support over all these years. Can you imagine? I'm coming up to the 5th anniversary of Joy on Paper.
It's just amazing. I mean, I remember when I visited you, I think a month or two after you started.
Yeah.
And you had already seemed like you were doing it 5 years. And to have listened to you and all the writers and the agents and that mix, it's remarkable. And It always sounds like we're at your kitchen table and you're talking to a friend.
Well, thank you, Jim. It means so much to me that you've just followed along with me and helped me so much and just being such an encouragement. And of course, I adore you. That's the truth. And I just want to tell you that I want to sort of turn this over to you so you can tell people about yourself, about your poetry, and I hope you're prepared to read something.
I have, if you saw my desk, it's 2 feet high, just in case I have to pull something out of the stack to be useful.
Okay, so go ahead, tell us where this love of poetry came. One of the things I want to remind people, too, is that you have a YouTube channel where you are now reading your poetry, which is really, really nice. I think it's a great idea, and I love so many of them. Day in the Park, Goodnight Little Pond, Remembering Old Joy. So this is available now on YouTube, which I think is wonderful for poets. But tell us more about yourself and how you got involved in poetry.
Well, when I was a kid, I loved to read, and I loved to read poetry. I had a little poetry book. And you have to know that I was born in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, which is a steel town. And I grew up in Windsor, Pennsylvania, which is a coal town. And here I am, this short, chubby kid reading poetry. So this was not the environment. It's to be out of sync with everything. But I so enjoyed it, and it gave me an outlet, and it really opened up the door for me to become a writer later. But I'll tell you this. When I was in college, I took a class called Three Genres, which was about writing, playwriting, prose, and poetry. And when I became a copy desk editor at the Tampa Tribune, I actually read the poetry part every year because it made me a better headline writer. Because the thing I loved about poetry is you could convey so much information in a compact way, and that really paid off. And I want to just share one headline, and it's the headline I won $5 in a contest back when $5 could almost fill your gas tank up. But it was about the problems students were facing as they graduated, and the job market was tough. And the trick with headline writing is you want to have the most impactful font and the largest type size and the smallest amount of space. So I had very little space to write this, and yet I wanted to, I really wanted to grab people and get them into the story, which is a great story. So I remember the headline to this day. The headline said, "Grad Face Post Castle Job Hassle." So I really think it was poetry that opened up the door for me to come up with something very compact but very impactful. Now, when I retired about a dozen years ago, and I hadn't written much poetry, but I had read a lot of poetry, and it was terrible. The thing that I didn't realize is that my ability to write headlines was really dependent on the story and what the story was trying to say. So you can write a headline because you have the foundation of a story, but I found I couldn't write a poem without the foundation of a story. So gradually what came out of that over the next 5-10 years of listening to, and I'll tell you, my favorite poet is Billy Collins, who just has a way of telling a story, whether it's serious or sad or humorous. It's amazing. Just pulls you in, and that's what I was going for. And after 5 years of throwing most of what I did away, I gradually snuck up on a poem and wrote it and got it on paper before it got away. And then the last few years, it's been a great source of joy to me, joy on paper. And and so I'm compiling the 100 or so poems I've written. I'm compiling about 24 for a book.
Well, I think that, as you know, over the years, as I've talked to people about writing and about the joy on paper, people are so surprised when I say, look at poetry. If you're interested in writing, before you even start, you dream about writing in a novel, you dream about writing, a great nonfiction book. just stop for a moment. Read some poetry, because in poetry, you see how words can be used as exactly what you did in your copy, you know, in your writing for a newspaper. The way that a few words can say so much, and sometimes it's just magical. It gives me such a thrill. Of course, sometimes that, you know, a poem might be very, very long. You know, it's, one of the poems that I'm going to be talking, well, that I talked about at actually at Thanksgiving, and it was, you know, the refrigerator poem, Refrigerated 1957 by Thomas Lux, which is a longish poem, but it is so evocative. And it talks about maraschino cherries, which, you know, in the old days, everybody used to have a bottle of maraschino cherries in the refrigerator. And so he tells a whole story in a poem. He really tells a whole part of his life in that poem. And that's what you can do with poetry, isn't it?
Yes, and I think that is the trick. That originally, when you're talking about a newspaper article, a short one might be 500 words, a long one might be 3,000 words. But you, the headline, you only have 3 to 8 seconds to grab the reader and bring them into the story, and you have to be able to encapsulize it in such a way that they'll make a commitment, especially if it goes to what we call a jump page, like from page one to inside. And so I felt the responsibility of a headline writer, like a poet, was very compelling, because you have to grab them and get them into that story, and you don't have all day to do it. And I think that's what is. I fell in love with that as a child, and then as a grown up, I fell in love with it again, but did not realize how much work it was going to take.
Okay, well, now what are you going to read for us today?
Well, I'd like to get this one first. It's called On the Porch. And it was a submission for a contest. I did not win, but I did get a nice note from one of the judges. And the premise was that there was a painting, and you had to study the painting, and out of that painting pull a story. And this is that story called On the Porch. Dad bought two chairs in 98, painted them Wedgwood blue, put them near the window on the porch. He and Mom sat there often, side by side, sipping sweet tea, watching flowers grow. Pillows, Granny Apple Green, helped make life easier. Nearby was a table for Mom and Dad's brew. Both chairs are empty now. No sweet tea being served. Mom died about a year ago. Dad just stays inside. Azaleas in a makeshift vase stand guard. Vanguard, protecting Mom's bottled ashes so Dad can feel she's safe.
Oh, this is why I love poetry. It can touch your heart, touch your soul, make you dream, make you hope. It's beautiful, Jim. It's just beautiful.
Well, if I can do one more.
Oh, absolutely.
A nice little pond. And I have a pond in my backyard, and I just watched the pond, and the story emerged from the fog. It's called Goodnight, Little Pond. She walked to the pond, the one Dad took her to at age 9. That time she caught a panfish, green, blue, and lively, tasty too. Now she's back, longing for the moments he shared, naively thinking they'll last forever. They didn't. Funny how time fibs, whispering, why rush? You've got tomorrow and the next day and the next. But you don't. Dusk cozies in like the shallow sneak he is, forsaking light, embracing darkness. Then poof, he's gone. Pond and sky kiss. One last eternal goodbye as night's shadowed shroud unfolds like a curtain closing a sad play and everyone cries.
You know, It's really an honor to have poets on my program. You know, not a lot of radio programs do poets, but I just want to bring these few minutes, these few poems to people, because I think it opens their eyes. And, you know, at Valentine's Day, we're also thinking of love, and people are looking at, I think, more people look at poetry during this time, and just, you know, they want to say something in words that they might, you know, can't express themselves. And so there's poetry is an all year round joy to be able to write and to be able to read.
I don't know if you have time for one more. It's a little more upbeat than the last two, which
yeah, we have time. I'm making time. Sponsors will understand. Okay, just go for it.
I love the pillow guy.
So don't we?
This is a little bit fun, and it's called It's Spring Again, and it's perfect for the time of year. It's spring again. Barren trees in the backyard have leaves again. Mosquitoes fly by, big as planes. Flies fly by too, big as birds. Soon heat will arrive, and spring, like an old friend, will wave goodbye and leave. It's spring again. Flowers kiss the sun. Grass grows thick and fast. Doors and windows soon close, and artificial air bruises my skin. So long, spring. You're my favorite. Next year, can you stay longer?
Okay, well, I wish you could stay longer, but I'm going to be moving on. And, you know, I talked to L.L. Barkat, who is absolutely wonderful. You're fantastic. And now I'm going to be moving on to Kim Dower. But, Jim, how can people find your poetry?
I have a place where I put them online and stack them together so I could mention it. If you go to theprose.com, that's theprose.com, and the slash, the little side angle line, and write my name, Jim Lamb. And I have put right at the top of there links, a single page with links to most of my poems. And they're welcome to go there. And many of them have links to the videos as well. So enjoy, enjoy, enjoy.
Okay. Thank you again, J.S. Lamb, my friend Jim, for being here today on Joy on Paper.
Thank you, Patsy.
And happy Valentine's Day to you. Bye-bye
you
now.
Too.
Bye. Okay. Well, as I said, I'm skipping commercials, and I will just say happy Valentine's Day to Mickey Larson and Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. Bill is my intellectual property lawyer, and he should be yours because he is absolutely fantastic. And you can find him at Larson & Larson Patent Law. And also a special Valentine's greeting to Glenn Erickson, who is another of my sponsors. And he will understand that I am having just so much fun today talking to poets. And last but certainly not least, I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Kim Dower. Hi, Kim.
Hey, good morning, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, fine. You know, it's just wonderful. I wanted to do this special hour because I want to encourage people to read poetry and write poetry and just have fun with poetry. And you certainly have. And I love, when of course, I have to tell people that you're a famous literary agent. It's funny, I get so many books. I came in this morning and all the books were in brown wrappers. And, you know, you get like eight books in brown wrappers. And, you know, you don't know which one to pick out. You don't know which one. But when Kim Dower, people, listen, if you are looking for a literary agent, when Kim Dower sends out your book, she sends it in a nice envelope with a big label, Kim from L.A. And so, you know, she's always the one I open first. So, Kim, I'm so happy that now this time you're back on the program, not to talk about the people you represent, but to talk about your poetry.
Yeah, well, my poetry definitely fuels a lot of the other work that I do. I think that people who write, we all find that, that one encourages the other, and it's a beautiful kind of circular motion. When you represent writers and you write yourself, one really helps the other. So it's great to be able to have both things.
Well,
so, Patsy, you've been talking about poetry for the last hour. And, you know, I would imagine that your audience, a lot of people listening, also write poetry, would you suspect?
Oh, yes, quite a few.
So, you know, I always talk about in the workshops that I teach how there's no such thing as writer's block, for me anyway, because everything you see, everything you hear, the conversations, the clouds, whatever, can be turned into a poem if you just open yourself up to see it that way.
Yeah, and even sitting on a grave, because one of your books is called "Sunbathing on Tyrone Power's Grave." The minute I saw that title, I said, "I like this girl. I just like this girl."
Yeah, well, you know, we have got a cemetery out here in, I live in Los Angeles, and it's called Hollywood Forever, and it's got a lot of movie stars, and it's a very it's a beautiful place to just wander through. I happen to love walking through graveyards, which, you know, may or may not be weird, but I love the feeling that I get when I walk through a graveyard, and I like to read what's on the headstones, and I just feel calm. So Hollywood Forever has a lot of famous people buried there, and one of whom is Tyrone Power, who, of course, was the big matinee idol and, you know, played Zorro, and they have a beautiful marble bench for him. And when I first moved to L.A. a long time ago, I did used to sunbathe on his grave because it's right there in the morning light, nice, smooth, white marble. And it was...
He would like that, you know? Knowing him, you know, if you would have done it even, let's say... without anything on, he would have enjoyed it. So you're giving him a thrill. That's all I can say.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so. But, you know, it was in the days before they patrolled these places, and you could just sort of do anything in these graveyards. But anyway, I wrote down in a notebook in my 20s, sunbathing on Tyrone Power's grave, and it was all these years later when I put this fourth collection together that I found that note, and I thought, wow, that's the perfect title for this collection. So don't ever throw out your little notes in your journals, because you never know when they're going to come back and be perfect.
Wow. And the poems in that book and your other books are just, they're all, I just love them. And I want to know, what are you going to read for us today?
Well, you know, I realize this is a Valentine's show, so I guess have your poets been reading love poems?
No, actually they haven't, so that it would be wonderful here if we could have some love poems.
Well, you know, I write poems, people say that they're about one thing, and then they're about the other thing, which I think a lot of poems are. You know, they have different layers. And so I guess, you know, I was looking through my book. I don't have really straight-on love poems, but I do have love poems. And I'll give you a couple of examples, all right?
Okay, perfect.
This one is called Love Hurts. You are my tourniquet, my Saturday matinee, my jelly bean storm pointer and thumb. You are my hidden door, my home is your skin. You are the dream I taste the moment I awake, the bruised crime I live to commit. My drawbridge thunder shudder. You are my pink cloth childhood coat with the velvet collar, the red mark on my arm, the tunnel I crawl through on my hands and knees, the flapping bird struggling to fly.
Wow. Now, what book is that from?
That's from Sunbathing on Tyrone Power's Grave. And another one that's right next to it, they just happen to be side by side here, is called risk. I guess two kinds of love, well, there's so many kinds of love, but risk is, of course, one thing we all have when we fall in love. We're taking a big risk. So this is called risk. No one's ever stolen the moon for me, hoisted it out of the sky, carried it on his back, rolled it across his shoulders, its cold white fumes blasting him through space, stars sprawled out like clues under his feet. Oh, no one's ever dared to steal the moon from me until you, who sifted through dirty clouds, flew faster, higher than the hungry birds gnawing the air, their wings askew, believing the moon was theirs.
Oh, when I listen to poetry, there's just something, it's like the universe stops for a moment, and you're into words and into that joy that some author has found about putting words on paper, and this magical thing that happens is just combining ordinary words can be so marvelous. And I mentioned to one of the other poets about how at Thanksgiving, I'm now making it a family tradition that we're going to do Refrigerator 1957 by Thomas Lux, because, you know, it's wonderful to have these traditions. And that poem, of course, you happen to know Thomas Lux, which, you know, he was one of the great poets in the United States. And isn't that poem, he tells a story just as you tell a story. And in that poem, once you read that poem, you never forget. You never look at a maraschino cherry the same.
No, so that's one of the great poems ever. And yes, Thomas Lux, I have this book, Sunbathing on Tyrone Power's Grave, is dedicated to him because he was my very first poetry teacher in college. And I have a poem in this book I'll read. It's also a love poem. It's a different kind of a love poem, but it's for Thomas Lux. So shall I read it?
Oh, please.
So this one is called Searching for Your Photo. So Tom very sadly passed away. It's almost exactly 2 years ago to the day. And at the time, everyone was putting tributes together, and we were all asked to find photos that we had of him. So I was desperately searching for this particular photo that I loved, and I wrote the poem called Searching for Your Photo. I look through every box crammed with my son's old baby pictures, family trips, soccer teams. All I want is to find that photo of you. There were a few, that time in Boston when you and the others came to visit. Charles Hotel, early 80s, you were wearing that dumb earring. Even now, from the beyond, you'd call it dumb, you who were once so young, young until the day you were no longer. The diamond stud must have seemed cool. I wanted to find that photo, you laughing, sitting on the couch. We'd all been drinking. It was fun. The only poetry was in our hearts. This was just a visit. You were no longer my teacher, now a friend from the past. You called me fruitcake and dummy, so I knew you still cared. Me, your student from long ago. I wanted that picture to show the world you being silly. We were probably telling bad taste jokes, all of us stupid, all of us together on the couch.
Again, this, what can you say? It's magical. It's magical. That's what poetry is. That's why I wanted to bring this program today to people, to just take a moment and look, you know, just there are so many wonderful poets out there, so many wonderful poems out there. And you can start with Kim Dower and go to where do people find your poetry?
Well, I'm in very grateful to say that I'm in a lot of independent bookstores, and I'm also in the library, which is really exciting. A lot of libraries have my books, which is the most important thing to me. So you can actually go find a book and see if you like it. You can go to my website and see my different books, and there's examples of some of the poems. And it's just very simple. It's kimdowerpoetry.com, and there you'll find them.
And of course, on Amazon, they're all on Amazon.
Sure, of course.
But it's wonderful if you find it in an independent bookstore. And again, Kim, you know, I just want, you know, for my listeners who are at the beginning of the program, I always say for writers and those who dream of writing.
Yeah.
So often people have this, and I just had somebody on Tuesday. He had written a book 20 years ago, and he put it away. He had a job. He has to make money, you know, keep things going. But after he retired, he took it out, and he realized, you know, that's a pretty darn good story. Of course, he had to work it. He had to rewrite a lot, you know, update it. Like, they didn't have telephone booths, you know, people don't go into but there's this passion within people that they, and that's the wonderful thing about being a human being. We have words and we can use them. And so you
and they can change our lives and the lives of the people around us. I mean, that's also so powerful, isn't it? That reading a story or reading a poem or a novel can transform you in the moment. And then if it's wonderful, you'll think about it as you think about Refrigerator 1957, that poem by Thomas Lux. And so many people, every time we open a refrigerator, we think of that poem. So words not only move us, but they can also make us see the world differently.
And of course, you teach poetry. And where do you teach poetry?
Well, I'm so lucky that I was for 2 years the Poet Laureate of West Hollywood, California, and as part of my responsibilities, I taught a free workshop at the West Hollywood Library. So I still do that, which is wonderful, on Saturday mornings. And I just taught a really fun class for the UCLA Writers Extension program called Wake Up Your Prose Using Poetic Techniques. So these marvelous prose writers would bring their work in, and we'd look at where they might shake it up a little bit with some poetry. And these are people who never read poetry. They all said, well, we don't really care for poetry. And by the end of the class, they were all writing poetry. It was just really exciting because I would bring in poems to show how a poem can be a narrative story, but how every word has to be charged with meaning. And that really helps when you're writing prose.
Well, you know, I get so many books, thank you, and you send many of them, that I immediately can tell if an author has a poetry background. There is a different form that, you know, even the most, it could be a thriller, it could be a historical romance. If they know poetry, if an author has sort of been seeped with poetry, it seeps into their writing. They have a little bit of a flow. You feel it. And because they've learned this love of words. Poets learn to love one word.
Yes.
It's really funny. A novelist will write, you know, 100,000 words, but they're not in love with one word. But a poet...
Yeah, that's a great point, Patsy, because that one word can torture you. I can spend a day trying to decide if it's of or the. I mean, you know, just to... Because everything is about the rhythm and the movement and the flow and exactly what are you trying to say, you know. And I there's a wonderful teacher, I've had so many wonderful teachers, but one poet, Robert Wrigley, he told us he would write down, do better, next to, do better, like even one word, do better. There's a better word than that word for that place. And it's like a puzzle.
Yeah, you know? And it's really great if you can learn to love words. And please, please, I'm begging all these novelists out there who are just starting off, don't use these grammar programs because they come out with one word change and it drives me crazy. You have to love your own words and find your own words. Mm-hmm. And in poetry, you can do it. So I want to thank you so much, Kim Dower, for being on Joy on Paper today to celebrate Valentine's Day, because I love poetry and I love all you poets out there.
Oh, thank you, Patsy, and we love you. Happy Valentine's Day to you, too. And
There are not many talk radio programs that have a poet's hour.
But, no, I know.
What I love to do. I love to encourage poets, and everybody, get this tired. I love this Tyrone Power one. Okay, you have been a real joy today, Kim.
Thank you, Patsy. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Whoa. Okay. I'm going to post this one up on this weekend on my webpage. You just have to take a moment. It's Valentine's Day, and you're going to want to, just a little romance. There are so many wonderful poems out there about romance. You can just dig in and find something. You don't have to even spend money on an expense. You know, many times the most wonderful gift is not a card that you buy with a poem that you probably don't even read. It's writing it out in your own hand. Even don't plagiarize. Don't sign a poem, a sonnet by William Shakespeare that with your own name. But write it in your hand, because that's precious. That's something somebody will want to save and hold and keep near and dear to them. Even the littlest scrap of paper written by someone you love is precious. I have only a few things written by my mother. It never occurred to me. I don't know, when you're young, you don't think about it. But those few things that I have written in her own handwriting, recipes actually, because that's what she did. She was always cooking. But they're very, very precious to me. So write out a poem in your own handwriting and sign the real author's name, and have a wonderful, wonderful Valentine's Day. And just remember, one of the things that I always tell you is one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to have those magic words, lights, camera, action in your book, or will be turned into a major motion picture, a film, a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start. And all you have to do is a page a day, and in a year, you're going to have a book, and you're going to be a really happy, happy person. And you don't have to go to a graveyard like Kim for inspiration. You can just go walking out there. It's a beautiful day if you're in Florida. If you're lucky and you're in Florida, it is one of these absolutely gorgeous Florida days. Get out there, think, and then come out and come home and write a book. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed. Happy Valentine's Day, Big Ed, in the control room. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Okay, bye-bye, everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. But now you